we have the best of both worlds. Yes, it's the Halloween season, but UFOs are year-round. Today we have the co-founder of OPUS, Organization for Paranormal Understanding and Support, and they help people with their paranormal experiences and paranormal phenomena, such as alien contact. And today we have Lester Viles of how OPUS started, his own experiences, and maybe some details from what other people have experienced. I'm looking forward to it. Well, guess what? I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told Studios, co-founder of OPUS, Lester Viles. Hello, hello.
How are you, Tony?
I'm better now that you're here. I'm excited to have you here. And, you know, we've been doing a lot of Halloween stuff and paranormal stuff on for this month. But, you know, we're also, our ground roots are about aliens and UFOs and just experiences in paranormal world itself. So it's great to have you here. And I know you created an amazing organization, OPUS, and I'd like to start off by just saying thank you and tell us about OPUS. What's it all about?
Yeah, okay. Well, you have to go back a little bit further than the creation of OPUS as to how this all got started. When I was 11 years old, I saw this white ovalish object silently flying over or moving over a tree line. Nice. Near my house. This is when I lived in Connecticut. And of course, it scared the hell out of me. And I ran in the house and tried to get my father to come out. And by the time he did, the thing had disappeared. And so he said, oh, it's probably just a beacon of light reflecting off a cloud or something, you right. know. And of course, I didn't buy that. So anyway, I went to the library thereafter. And back in those days, George Adamski was the big hitter. And so I started reading his books and really got into the whole UFO thing. And well, as life progressed, I went to college, got married, moved out to California in 1985. And I picked up the newspaper, and Stanton Freeman was going to be talking about UFOs and a government right. cover-up. Well, I tell you, it was like somebody threw a switch, and decided I'm going to go see him. And so I went, and I expected to see a handful of people, but the auditorium was full. And he gave one of his inimitable, presentations, mm-hmm. really hard hitting and full right. of as many facts as he could produce that weren't redacted anyway. And MUFON had a table in the foyer, the Mutual UFO Network, right. Which was established in 1969. And they produce a journal. And so I decided, well, I'm going to start getting the journal and, read up on the most recent cases. And after a while, that wasn't enough for me. And I decided to become a field investigator. They have a training right. course. And so I did that. And as it turned out, most of the cases that I investigated turned out to be abduction type cases, where these people had contact with non-human intelligences. And these people would ask me, did I know of other people having experiences like they did? Mm-hmm. And I said, yes, I do. And next thing I know, I'm facilitating a support group in San Jose that met on a monthly basis. So I was written up in the Monterey Coast Weekly paper and along with a few other people that were involved with UFOs and spiritual type things. And this woman that was written up in it, her name was Carol Austin, had an experience, and she wanted to know what was happening to her brain waves when she was in contact with these off-earthly entities. So when I heard that, I said, well, I don't know if I can do something along those lines. But then she said that she was working with an emergency room doctor down in Carmel. And so I had a doctor friend by the name of Eugene Lipson, who actually turned out to be the co-founder with me of Opus. Gene, unfortunately, has since passed away. But he was always interested in connecting with other doctors that were interested in the paranormal, right, UFO phenomena. So we went down there, and I tell you, we had the most incredible afternoon with this woman. And the first thing that happened when we walked into her house, there was a picture on the wall, a framed picture. And it was her standing on the back deck of a ship, of a boat, probably a yacht. It's probably a better terminology for it. And I said, what's this all about? She says, oh, I was helping these treasure hunters. I said, oh, well, how were you helping them? And she says, well, I was in contact with the captain of the galleon that went down. So that was the start of the afternoon. And the rest of the afternoon, she was telling us things about ourselves that there was no possible way that she could.
Oh, wow.
And what we found out, she had had a near-death experience at a younger age, and she became psychic.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hear that
afterwards.
A lot. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems to be a real common thing. Either, you know, you have an abduction and you become psychic, or you have a near-death experience and you come out of it with psychic abilities.
Right.
When Gene and I left that afternoon, we said, how can we possibly help a person like this? And that was the afternoon that Opus was hatched, the Organization for Paranormal Understanding and Support. And, you know, it's sort of a broad brush terminology, paranormal, which includes just about anything in the psi area as well. So as things turned out, though, what we found ourselves being involved with mostly is the abduction phenomena. And so we decided, it wasn't something that we decided upon, that we were going to focus on, but that's what happened. And so we've turned into basically a majority of our cases that we work with are abduction type cases.
And after doing almost 500, 600 shows of Truth Be Told and 7-8 years of doing this, I'm starting to believe there's a lot of connections between all paranormal, meaning ghost, possessions, versus almost alien abductions. It's very similar to some of the stories, that you hear. So I'm wondering what are your thoughts on that when it comes to.
I totally agree with you, Tony. I think this is all connected.
Yeah.
No matter what. You're talking about ghosts or orbs,
right,
or the grays,
right,
or interdimensional beings. You know, people ask me all the time, well, so what do you think it is? Is it extraterrestrial in nature? Is it interdimensional? Mm-hmm. Is it time travel?
Right.
Or is it the military? And what I always say, it's all the above. As a matter of fact, it could be anything you can possibly think of.
The paranormal buffet.
Yes, exactly. That's a good name for a show.
Right?
Paranormal buffet.
There we go. Started right here on Truth Be Told.
That's right. You might want to change your name.
Right, right.
But matter of fact, just completing the first part of a study, which is a follow-on to the Omega-3 study.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you about that. What is the Omega-3 study?
Yeah, what we did is we took 71 people that felt that they were abducted, and we compared that with 51 people that had no experience in that regard. And we had them take, various instruments, psychological instruments, all types, like 7 or 8 different questionnaires that were included in the study. And let me, I can actually just read you the conclusion.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, please.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, in general, abductees' experiences profile differently than do their comparison counterparts on a number of general psychological and specific neurological variables. Yet there are remarkable similarities between the experiential group and the comparison group. It should be noted that in no case did experiences or comparison group participants show any signs of mental illness or personality disorder. Fantasy proneness does not appear to play a differentiating role between the experiential and the control groups. However, sensitivity to alternative realities and early and recurrent paranormal or psi experiences seem to play a role in the abduction experience. Childhood conflict, psychosocial tension and abuse and trauma more than likely facilitated dissociative coping style in later life. And dissociative coping style is not something that, again, is a psychopathology. It's just a way for them to deal with the experience. How much a part dissociation plays in the abduction experience remains an open question, but the ring and rosing abuse trauma dissociation pathway remains a viable descriptive, if not explanatory, principle. Both experience with and interest in the abduction phenomena have an impact on how one's body is perceived to function, how one views the world and one's purpose in it, and how one defines or redefines one's faith, tradition, and beliefs. In essence, both experience with and interest in contact seem to change one's sense of self and one's worldview. Abduction experiences believe that there is a sentient, purposive alien intelligence at play in their lives and at work in the world. What the intelligence goals are seem to be more beneficent than benevolent, more benign than malignant. This, though, remains an open question and a point of doubt in the minds and hearts of some abductee experiencers and some comparison control participants. It also remains a point of contention among abduction researchers. The brain generally and the temporal lobe and limbic system more particularly play a mediating role in anomalous experiences such as abduction. This in no way implies the abductions are all or only in the abductee's heads. Rather, it points to the likelihood of temporal lobe ability as a preset or a precursor to extraordinary experiences. While it would be too reductionistic to claim that the brain creates such experiences, it is not far-fetched to think that the brain plays an important part in the who and the what of extraordinary experiences and how they are interpreted. So, anyway, and this was a kind of a follow-on to Kenneth Ring's research, and so we took it another step further. And now the Omega 4 study, which we just finished the first phase.
Oh wow!
What we did is we went out to therapists and had them take a questionnaire, and we just recently finalized the report. And we are going to publish that in a journal somewhere. We haven't decided where yet.
Right.
But there was some interesting things. One of the things that came out of it was that the majority of people having these experiences, the number one entity that they're dealing with is grays.
Really? Okay. Well, I mean, that's what I've seemed to always hear about is the grays.
Yeah. And one of the things that came up in a conversation I had with someone somewhere was like all these different races that are along with the grays, like the praying mantis type, the mantids, the reptoids, the Nordics.
Right.
They all have grays involved with them. And it's almost like you go to a celestial store out there somewhere in the universe,
right?
And I'll take two grays over here, and then I'll take the ones that are blue,
right,
or the brown ones. And you know, because Whitley Strieber had the short little blue guys, you know, and other people have brown ones, but they all seem to be, you know, kind of the same thing. So they go to some store and they and if it doesn't work out, you know, then you just get another one, because they seem to be like, you know, biological and robotic in nature, a combination of things. And I think basically the quote unquote aliens, if you will, are afraid of us because of our abilities. And so they need to control us with these robot-like things. And if we hurt them, then it's, you just get a new one.
Right, right. I have a question when it comes to the abductees. In your years of experience in reading studies and stuff like that, when it comes to, we'll talk about the psychological and physical characteristics here in a second, but I want to know, by somebody just saying, I think I was abducted or I was abducted, without any implants or anything, and again, we'll talk about that stuff, without any evidence, how do you come to the conclusion this is 100% true that the abduction happened?
Yeah, and I think the way that happens is that when you start talking to these people, and 99.9% of the time, it's not that they come to you and say, "Well, I've been abducted." It's like this and this happened, and this is the result of what had happened.
Right.
And am I crazy? Am I going crazy? And a lot of them, before they even get to us, have been to a psychologist or a psychiatrist.
Right.
And, you know, they find out that they're not crazy. Okay,
right.
So then what? And most of these people, you know, they don't want notoriety. They're concerned with what's going on with them. Why are these things happening? Who are they? And so when you go down that road with them, you something has happened. You know, you got marks on your body, you have implants in your body, all these remembrances, that a lot of it is remembered consciously. You know, it's not under regression, you know, being found out. So, you know, John Mack, you know, wrote books about this, the abduction and this Cosmos book. There's something going on. And the big question, what is it? You know, as I said before, is it interdimensional? Is it time travelers? Is it extraterrestrial? Is it all the above? And I think that's exactly what it can be. It can be all the above. And these people, you know, especially in the beginning stages of their experiences, they need help. You know, it's a traumatic, fearful, terrorizing type thing that goes on. But after a while, they come to accept it. And then in the later stages, even when it stops, they wonder why. And it's like the Stockholm syndrome, almost that goes on.
Why do you think some people, sorry to interrupt there.
No,
why do you think some people, because I've interviewed both sides of this, abductees where they had, it was very traumatic, it changed their life in not a good way. But then there's some people that actually didn't have a bad experience at all, and they actually cherished it and, you know, look forward to maybe another visitation or abduction. So
absolutely.
How do you explain that?
Well, I think it's a question of you know, your background, first of all,
right?
You know, how you've been brought up, your belief system. But then again, I think we're dealing with not only one race and one group. We're dealing with multiple groups.
Right,
so it's
exactly.
Like here on Earth, we have good people and we have bad people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have the same thing out there. We have the good people and we have the bad people, or aliens, if you will. And it's interesting to note, too, that, you know, the main thing that people talk about are the grays. But then in this recent Omega 4 study, the first part, the second most talked about thing are orbs.
Mm.
These orbs that come, and then we get down to ghosts.
Right.
Ghosts are talked about, and other things like that. And so, as we said earlier, it's all connected.
I believe that. I mean, we've even talked about, you know, even Bigfoot. It's like, how Bigfoot, it's so elusive and disappears and reappears, and nobody sees them for a long period of time, and then all of a sudden they're seen again. So not a lot of tracks. And
and oftentimes there's UFOs associated with the sightings of Bigfoot.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Because even my sister, I didn't even know this until just recently. When I was a kid, and like I said, my listeners have heard this a billion times, my family saw a UFO, like you. Mm-hmm. But my sister that night, she said she was dreaming about being visited by these whatever beings. And she said when she woke up the next day, her socks were soaked like she had been outside.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I've heard about it. So what do you hear when it comes to psychological and physical characteristics of like an alien contact? Is there something that people, let's say, look for if they feel that they've been abducted, or a family member speaks of it, or they come to visit you? What do you look for when determining the abduction?
Yeah. Oftentimes, you know, it'll start off with nosebleeds that are reoccurring.
Oh, really?
on a regular basis, associated with dreams of being abducted or dreams of being in contact.
Interesting.
So you wake up in the morning and there's blood on the sheets or something, right. You have grass inside, your bedding, and you don't know how the hell it got there.
Right.
You're not a sleepwalker, and so you start to wonder, what happened? Where did I go? I think Bud Hopkins many years ago told a story of a woman who came to him and reported being abducted, and it was a neighbor who somehow found out that she had gone to Bud Hopkins and confirmed the fact that there was a UFO over her house when she claimed that she was abducted, that she had seen this UFO.
Right.
Because they had started to talk to one another. And so, I mean, that's pretty indicative of something, has happened. But from a physical standpoint, there's bruising on the body that, mm-hmm. Almost like fingerprints, where you were, on the inside of your groin or something, in various places on your arms where you can actually see, because of the pressure that was applied, mm-hmm. Marking. And then you have, scoop marks where skin has been taken. You have all of a sudden patterns, like triangular red patterns or dots in a triangular pattern, where, these things are just, you wake up in the morning and you certainly didn't go to bed with it. And so how did that happen? And then you start having dreams about the
right,
experiences.
Right.
And so you start putting these things together and you say to yourself, well, from a physical standpoint, we're starting now to add things up, and I've got this thing behind my ear,
mm-hmm.
and it bothers me. And you go to the doctor and they do an x-ray or something, and it's an object, but they don't know what it is. And then, the late Roger Lear did a tremendous amount of work with the implants, where he removed implants from people that came to him. And there's some really interesting things that I don't know if you've ever heard about the information that he put together in his book.
No, I would love to hear
scaffold.
Something if you have it. But
yeah,
because
so
it's curious how many implants. I mean, when you hear implants, it's like, what the hell are the implants?
Yeah. Well, first of all, they could be tracking devices, or they could be monitoring. Monitoring you, or they. Well, as I'll read to you, they've also been found to be transmitting in some cases. Hmm. So. The implants, no inflammatory or rejection reactions by the body to these foreign objects, which is unusual, because usually if you have something in your body, it wants to expel it. no visible portal of entry. Collections of specialized nerve endings surrounding the object. An outer coating of ceramic biological material. Now, what the hell is that?
Right.
A metallic phase where inorganic metal becomes biological tissue. Now, that blew me away. The emission of radio waves, which are deep space frequencies in the FM band. Electromagnetic fields in excess of 10 milligauss. Composition of meteoric iron, 66. Rare earth metals such as U-236, a single isotope of uranium existing by itself, as well as elements such as uranium, which is very rare and hard to find in the Earth's crust. Non-terrestrial isotopic ratios indicating the involved elements did not come from Earth. The existence of carbon nanotubes, carbon nanostrands, and carbon nanofibers. These factors were considered non-existent in nature, and many scientists made definitive statements they could not be made in the laboratory. This has been reversed as commercial products are being designed and made from this technology. The oldest of these was in specimens taken from one of the surgical patients, which had been in their body for over 46 years, which was old enough to eliminate back engineering from UFO crash sites such as Roswell. Gold spheres, which have unknown function, metallic caverns that are no larger than the diameter of one atom, resistance to ordinary cutting techniques such as metallic sewing or severing with a cutting instrument. One of the specimens had to be cut with a laser.
Oh my gosh, wow.
Anyway.
Pretty amazing, though. That's pretty
amazing. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he went to a number of, reputable labs and had these things analyzed. And then I think from the physical side of things, you have so many things to look at. And with the combination of people, not knowing how or where these things, originated or how it came about, I should say, and is just that, mind-boggling.
Yeah, and what do you think, like, we're dealing with here? It's like, because we hear, tens of thousands of abductees, if not hundreds of thousands, or, there's
millions
out there that, because a lot of people don't come forward at all.
Right.
Like even my sister, who shocked me. That's the first time I've heard it, and that was almost 40 years ago, or probably 45 years ago. But what do you think we're dealing with? Why do you think they're abducting us? Are we just an experiment, or was this something that interdimensionally we were servants of theirs before? I mean, I'm just curious. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think there's multiple reasons why they're here. And a definitive answer is difficult depending upon which group you're talking about.
Right.
Some of the reasons are like the Rendlesham Forest case, which were supposedly time travelers from 40,000 years in the future, came back. They were basically us.
Right. Said, you're screwed.
They came back to get, DNA and things of that nature, because it sounds like we eventually screwed up in the future and mankind needed a boost from us older generations.
Right.
But the same goes for the quote unquote aliens, that some of the things that they're taking are important to them for survival reasons. And then, of course, there's the sinister side of things, where they're abducting people and creating hybrids, which supposedly can look like you and I, that they've gotten to the point where they've perfected their experimenting, and eventually going to take over. Especially if you consider the fact that there are millions of people out there that have been abducted, and that they're supposedly, is I don't know the exact number, but a lot of hybrids running around that, as I said, look like you and I. So, you know, what's the agenda? What's the agenda? World domination, helping themselves to survive, or maybe it's just basically them coming here, and it's a classroom, and they bring their younger generation in. Now, it's like what we do with animals. Like, take a dolphin, for instance. We go out in a boat. Okay, we're on top of the ocean there, and we scoop up this dolphin, and we take him out of his environment, and we put him on board this craft, this ship.
Right.
And, you know, we tag him, all right? So it's an implant that we do. And then we nine times out of ten, they take blood. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so those are the same kind of things that are happening to us. And so I always say it's the next generation, because people say, well, oh my God, they're so smart. Then why do they have to keep abducting us? They've already got everything they need to know.
It's not like our DNA changes that much.
Yeah. It takes about, you know, 600 million years or something, you know, before it changes. But anyway, so then we throw the poor animal back in the water, and then a year later we come back and we pull them out again. And that's another thing where they actually are following family members, and it seems to be generational.
Yeah, I heard that a lot of people saying
these things are absolutely generational. So, well, you know,
well, it's funny what you were talking about, you know, people from 40,000 years in the future. I don't know if you've seen that Amazon, I always say Hollywood sometimes predicts a lot of the future, because there's a movie called The Tomorrow War on Amazon, where we come back, you know, into the past to bring people into the future to fight for our future. So it's almost feels like, in a way, that's kind of what you're talking about. Like, oops, we screwed up. Something happened. We need to go back and bring. And I think even Star Trek or Star Wars. No, Star Trek, when they came back and brought the whales in from the past to the future to save our planet. Trek. So, I mean, you know, there's a possibility that that's what most of this is.
You know, you can just only imagine the possible answers to all of this, you know, and each abductee experiencer has a somewhat different take on things. But the overall bottom line on this is that this is a spiritual journey that these people are on. It's not a religious thing. It's a spiritual journey where it's raising your consciousness, raising your ability to connect. You know, we talk about meditation to enable you to connect to the other side and things of that nature. And, you know, you these people come back and some of them become healers. I recently was at the MUFON symposium in Las Vegas in August, the end of August, and Robert Salas, who wrote the book Silent Giant, I guess it was, about the nuclear missiles being shut down and everything.
Yep.
Guess what? He's an experiencer. He's an experiencer. And I had the most incredible conversation with him about his experience, and so is his wife. And she became a healer afterwards. And this is something that happens a lot, where these people come back from these experiences and they have psychic abilities, they have healing abilities. Matter of fact, one of the people in the support group, the online support group, which we have, which is, you know, been such a blessing for a lot of people based on what they've told me, I actually used one that was a healer. He was up in Vancouver and I was having some back issues. And so we went through two different sessions. And after the second session, I was so much better. And he did this from Vancouver and I'm in Texas.
Kind of a remote type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, Gary Nolan at Stanford University and Kit Green, who's been involved with him and looking at abductees and these people that are have psychic abilities,
right,
that in their brain, in the caudate putamen area, there's more connections in there for these people versus you and I, who I don't know if you have psychic ability, but I don't.
I'm an intuitive where I can feel other people's energies.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm not. I'm not a predictor of, you know, flashes of future or past.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah. I don't know what made me think of this, but in one of the live support groups when I was in San Jose, I had a person in the group say, "I've seen you before." I said, "Oh, where, at a UFO conference or something?" He said, "No, I saw you on board the craft."
And you're so like, "Oh, okay."
I said, "Yeah." I said, "Yeah." That was my reaction. Okay, thank you. And it wasn't probably a year and a half, 2 years later, that another person, totally different person, different set of people in the group, said the same thing to me. "I've seen you before." I said, "Where? UFO, you know, conference or something?" He says, "No, I saw you on board a craft. You were sitting on a bench naked and you were freaking out, and they told me to go over to you and calm you down." So
you're like, I feel
at
like,
that point, yeah. I said, "Okay, I'm going to go get regressed." And I got regressed three times, and I didn't come up with anything related to what aliens or UFOs, but I had multiple past lives. Multiple past lives. And that's another thing.
I was going to say, there's a connection there, too.
There's a connection there, too.
Yeah. So. That's why I said sometimes with past lives, if we can regress to past lives, that might mean with the alien abductions, maybe in the past lives, there was some kind of connection between the two. So that's just a theory. That's nothing.
Yeah. No, I've thought of the same thing, Tony, that it's highly possible that something happened in that past life.
Mm-hmm.
There's a group at the University of Virginia. There's a Dr. Kelly, Frank Kelly.
Oh.
And they were talking about near-death experiences and reincarnation. This group at the University of Virginia is into all this kind of stuff. And there's some people there that you might want to have on your show. They're absolutely,
I would love to,
blow your mind. They talk about a past life where a person, let's say they got their fingers chopped off, you know, by an accident in a past life. And then this person now in this lifetime was born with those fingers gone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
And there's multiple things like that where something that happened in the past comes to the fore in a different way, not having an accident, but just being born
just
that
happened
way.
To be born. Wow, that is. Well, how does
one of the things they talked about was somebody who got shot, right? This person was born with where the same bullet went through and the exit wound, the entrance and the exit wound on either side.
Oh, my God. Well, how does Opus help a lot of these abductees and just people that have experienced some type of paranormal?
Yeah.
Well, how do you guys come in and work with them?
Well, what people do, the general routing of the help, they'll hit our website, which is opusnetwork.org, which you have up here. Thank you very much. And there's a support section, and they'll fill out a very simple form. And then I will, or one of the other people in our group, will do a little triage and find out what they're looking for. And we have like four different things that they can ask for. They can ask for professional help. They can ask for being included in the support group. They can just ask for some information, things of that nature. And so most of the people come to us, it's split between looking for a support group or a a mental health practitioner, a hypnotherapist, and we have resources along those lines that we can give to these people. And by the way, we're always looking for more people from around the country. So if your listeners are out there that are therapists, we'd love to hear from you. You can just contact me directly through our website. So the support group is an online, totally confidential. The only people that are in there are people that we put in there, and then they're talking 24/7 with each other. Mm-hmm. And that has proven to be probably the biggest help, that they know that they're not alone.
Wow.
That their experiences are very similar to other people's experiences. And then the second thing is to be able to, if they're looking for professional help, to try to get them to a therapist. 9 times out of 10, they're looking for a regression type work, so a hypnotherapist, to understand, what's going on with them, because, they might have some conscious recall, but some of these things are obviously buried deeper. Certainly in my case, it seems to be buried deeper after 3 regressions.
Right.
I still didn't come up with anything, UFO related, but, so that's basically the way we get to help people. And then, of course, I just recently came out with a book called The Unknown Other, The Existential Proposition, there you go, of Alien Contact, which Linda Howe did the foreword to. And very happy to have her do that for me. And so we talk about all of this, the whole background on Opus. And then we talk about the physicality, the nature of the phenomena, the psychological. We talk about all the things that are, backstory, so to speak. And then we have 33 stories from a lot of the people that were in the support group.
How do people join the support group? Is it online, like a Facebook or something like that? Or
no, it's if you go to opusnetwork.org, there's a tab at the top of the page that says support.
Right.
You just click on that, and then it'll take you to a page where you have to fill out this little information. Right. Then I or another person in the group, our group, gets it, and then we, put you into the group.
Great.
And it's real simple and straightforward. And like I said, these people have just, commented, and you'll see the comments in the book from these people about how Opus has helped them. Through their situation. And you brought up the fact too that there's people that have had real issues with the phenomena,
right,
and others who have had wonderful issues.
Right. I've heard both sides.
Yeah. And I think the free study, the Edgar Mitchell Foundation that put together a study, found that, like, I think it was like 80% of the people felt it was a real positive situation. Mm-hmm. So only 20% were negative.
Because it's almost like near death. It's like near death. Most say they've had great experience, but then there's a few that say that it was very dark and scary.
Yeah, yeah. Or it starts out that way, and then it becomes better. I've heard both sides of that story too. Right. So if I croak, I hope I have a good one.
You're right. Yeah, that's always a good thing. Well, somebody was asking, what is there a case that just sticks out in your mind that you always think about, or just that you carry carry along the way and tell people about?
Yeah, I think that one of the first cases that I got involved with was a couple in Northern California that were out picnicking at a state park just north of Santa Cruz. And it was getting to be dusk, and they were coming down out of the park, and they looked over the ocean and they saw this light. It caught their eye, and this light became bigger and bigger and bigger until it was over their head, and it was a triangular craft about the size of a small Learjet. And it had lights at the, you know, the apexes of the triangle.
Right.
And it made no sound, no nothing, and just slowly drifted into a canyon behind them. And they noticed again another light, and this thing got bigger and bigger until it was over their heads. And again, it was another triangular craft. And the first one, they felt they were looking at it. The second one, they felt it was looking at them, and they got frightened. And so this thing went into the canyon with the other one. Well, this happened five more times.
Oh my God!
There was a fleet.
You're like, wait a minute, deja vu.
yeah. And these things were just hovering there, you know, side by side, you know, kind of doing this little back and forth butterfly effect, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, the whole group went up simultaneously together, and then they went around a corner. But there's no corner there. It was like they went into this other dimension. And so, needless to say, besides being, you know, mesmerized and frightened, but they stood there like frozen almost. They finally got their wits about them and started to proceed out of the area, which was, it's hilly. They were still at a very pretty good elevation, and this path out of there. And I was up there with them to investigate this case. This path out of there is dark during the day, and at night it's treacherous, and they felt like they were floating down through that thing. And that's the last thing they remember until 3 hours later. They end up in a restaurant in Pescadero, and they have no idea how they got there, and they had 3 hours of missing time.
Oh my gosh.
So wow. So They developed a rash after this experience, and they went to a doctor, and one says, well, it's not poison oak or poison ivy, and there's a lot of poison oak where they were,
right?
But it wasn't that. And so they went to another doctor, and the doctor said, well, maybe some reaction to something internal. And so, okay, you know, but he had a picture of it. The man had a picture of this thing. And he showed it around the table to the support group, and almost without exception, they all said they had a similar reaction. And one of the people in the group said, well, I know what that is. And we said, okay, what is it? And he said, it's a reaction to the fluid that they dip you in when they bring you on board the craft to sanitize you. So needless to say, that was the first and the most impressionable case that, you know, biggest impression that, you know, I've had with a case.
That's
that
pretty
one.
Cool. I mean, I that must be a joy just to be able to work with a lot of these cases. You know, one of the biggest questions I think we all have, and I've asked this 1,000 times, I'm sure you've even thought of or asked this yourself, is will we ever finally, just not full disclosure from our government, but do you feel the extraterrestrials will present themselves in a way that there's no doubt, there's no you know, because right now we get some hints from the government, and we get some pictures from MUFON here and there, but do you feel that they're going to make some big spectacle entrance
land on the White House lawn,
right?
Yeah,
something like that. Do you feel that's ever going to happen?
And like the day the Earth stood still,
right?
That's still a great movie. Oh,
that
my
was
God.
Oh my God.
The original.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I think we're getting closer to it. I think that it's inevitable that it will happen. It's just a question of timing.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of talk about the fact that something will probably happen before 2030. The drumbeat seems to be getting louder, you know, for that kind of a date. So You have people like Israeli general Haim Eshed that came out with a book that talked about the fact that we're working with the aliens. There's bases on the moon. There's bases on Mars. But the aliens don't want to show themselves yet because we're not ready. We don't understand space, and
hopefully, it's, like I said, and we hope it's a good experience.
I've heard, some really negative things too, about the fact that there's a couple of races out there. One is friendly to us, another one just the opposite, and that we could be fighting a war of that kind in the near future. And so the government, has to be very careful in panicking the populace. But on the other hand, it would be better for us to understand that we have an issue and then be prepared to handle it.
That's the biggest thing, is are we going to be able to handle it? So
my son-in-law has so many guns. I just got one little pistola, but
I don't know if that's going to help much.
No, I don't know either.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, the time is up, but I'd love for you to promote Opus one more time and tell people where to go and how to get involved.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, Tony, thank you very much for having me on your show today. I really, truly appreciate it. And for those people interested in the type of thing we've been talking about today, please go to the opusnetwork.org website, where the homepage has a picture of the book. As Tony put up earlier, The Unknown Other and the Existential Proposition of Alien Contact. And I think you'll find it an interesting read. I also talk a little bit about the UAP report that the government put out. And I do have the full Omega-3 study in there. And I think you'll find that of interest as well. So again, thank you, Tony.
Of course.
Love to do it again sometime.
Oh, don't worry. We'll make this a part one of many. So, okay. But don't go anywhere. I'll wait for after the show.
Sure.
But everybody, thank you so much. In fact, today is going to be a two for one. At 3 o'clock today, I have another show, so stick around for that one. But as always, thank you for supporting us and sharing the show and leaving great comments and just talking about Truth Be Told. It's always a good thing. So appreciate it. I'm Tony Sweet. But also make sure on Mondays you watch the Robert Hensley show, Minuteman Report. And on Wednesdays, if you want more of that shaman, spiritual, crystal bowls and all that good stuff, we have Bonnie Burka does her show at 3 o'clock on Wednesdays. So that's our team here at Truth Be Told. Until next time, I'll see you then. Bye.
This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California. Join us on social media, Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio, Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows.